Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for listening to the Professional Insight Podcast. We are now in season four or season three. We just really don't know yet. We'll figure it out. It's the pandemic. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast, for sharing and caring, and for sending in your questions. Thank you also to our sponsors, Brand Boulevard, for giving us free swag to give away, well, right now, just to us. But that, we really appreciate it.
Is that where you're bridging Corey from there, Collins?
I don't know. You know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because we're not getting one anyway. So why would he even care?
Until we
like,
get one.
He's poor, remember? My name's Brandon Curry.
I'm poor Jeff Collins.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
So we're gonna give the poor bastard.
Jeff, you can be the title sponsor.
Yeah. He can be the Bridge and Quarry, brought to you by Bridges and Quarries. I got a question.
A mill guy to sponsor us. They got the cash right now.
All right.
Say a lot.
How about you work on that?
Yeah, I'd love to meet them in person.
They're losing money right now, buddy. They're losing money.
Yeah.
Mill prices. Yeah. Lumber futures, they've been dropping steady for weeks now.
Yeah, poor lumber guys.
All right, so got a question in. We are recording this on June 22nd, 2021.
Happy summer.
You know what? It's summertime. It's now the second full day of summer. And so therefore, we're just ecstatic that Trevor Linney's not on vacation. And he's actually on the podcast right now. So, and
when you're listening to this, I'm on vacation.
Yes, 100%. He is. He's in a trailer where you can't take a number two. Question for you, Trev.
Yes.
Our lovely federal government and Minister of Finance, Chrystia Freeland, went ahead and as of June 1st, enacted the new mortgage stress test rules in an effort to stamp down the price increases that are happening across Canada.
Yep.
Even when you take out Vancouver and Toronto, the market is still running hot. Yep. But I've said, you and I have talked about this offline, but I've said this on a post. We do not have a mortgage problem in Canada. We have a supply problem in Canada because there's so much bloody red tape to get anything done. And Jeff has spoken about this in previous episodes on getting permits and getting site plans. So anyways, this is government. They like to regulate in order to supposedly help. But can you please tell our listeners what these new rules mean?
Okay, so first and foremost, it was OSFI, the Office of the Superintendent of Financial Institutions, that back in April announced that they were going to make uninsured,
correct,
so borrowers putting down 20% or more, they were going to make their qualifying criteria harder. They were going to increase the qualifying rate. So the people that had the most amount of money to go into the housing market with were going to be the group that were going to be penalized. So OSFI,
put that into layman's terms for everyone.
Yeah. So I'm getting there.
You saved your down payment. Shame on you. There you go.
You put your butt. You've saved as much money as you can to get yourself to that 20%+ so that you don't have to pay default insurance on the purchase. And, you know, the OSFI, decided to make the stress test harder because at that time it was the benchmark, which was 4.79%, or the contract rate, so meaning the contract that you have negotiated with the lender, bank, credit union, broker, what have you, that interest rate plus 2%, whichever was higher. So 4.79. So if you had a rate of 2.49, that would give you a rate of 4.49. So 4.79 still held true. Anyways, so they decided they were going to, by the sounds of it, do this 5.25. And, you know, fast forward, basically this was April, throughout April, part of May, it was opened to stakeholders. So like Mortgage Professionals Canada, like Neighborhood Dominion Lending Centers, mortgage brokers and mortgage agents are part of, are members of, their stakeholder. They went, you know, they wrote an open letter saying, hey, it doesn't make sense to be doing this. You know, there should be other avenues that we should be looking at to make changes. Anyways, long and short, fast forward, we're end of May, and OSFI says, yep, June 1st, this is coming into play. What we were not expecting was good old government, Chrystia Freeland.
Government of Canada.
Government of Canada. She decided to follow suit with OSFI's new regulation and made it on all mortgages, because why not? Right. So now everybody, regardless whether you're putting down 5% or you're putting down 95%, you now have to qualify for your mortgage based on 5.25%. What that means to consumers is you're seeing anywhere from like a 3 to 5% decrease in your overall purchasing power. The less money you make, the less money you're qualified for, the more impactful it is. So if you were pre-approved originally for 400,000, you're going to be impacted more negatively than the person that was pre-approved for 800,000. Is higher, you have ability to afford more. And because of that, there's less fluctuation in your overall affordability when you add liabilities in, like we've talked about in the past, the whole, you know, monthly obligations, car payments, etc. It's important to note, anybody watching, listening, that last year, pre-pandemic, our government announced that they were going to loosen the stress test qualification criteria because they felt that it was very archaic. 479 is really just a made-up number, the benchmark. So they were trying to come up with an alternative solution. And this was in conjunction with OSFI, Office of the Superintendent of Financial Institutions. It was to change and make things, you know, more spot on with what's happening out there in the marketplace. So basically what those changes were supposed to be back then were that we were going to use the, I believe specifically it was the contract plus two, but it was specifically, the a set rate that was predetermined on a weekly basis, and that was how they were going to calculate it. All of a sudden, COVID happens, we enter the state of the world that we are in. Well, Ontario's still in for some stupid reason.
Hopefully climbing out.
Anyways, so they decided, okay, we're going to pump the brakes. We're not going to make any changes right now. That was in April. And April 2020, fast forward, now we decided to make it harder because the market got hot.
All right. So we're going to use a real life example. The average house price in Canada is what, Trevor?
I can't tell you what the average house price in Canada is.
Okay. What about the region? Do we have a region?
I can pull up the most recent stats. Let's see.
It's probably around 540, I bet you, in the region right now.
Probably. It depends on which municipality, right? But
yeah,
so $716,000 is the average house price in the Canadian housing market right now. Now, that is including, obviously, Toronto and Vancouver.
Mm.
So that is... price in Niagara.
Yeah. So like if for those that didn't know, and I apologize, Jeff, because I know you're part of Royal LePage NRC. I don't know if they have it as readily available, but Sally Magar on their website, right underneath their about and then market report, readily available statistics there 24/7. So I'd love to plug NRC if they have it as well. So Jeff, tell me if they do. But they do. Right now, what's that?
They do.
It right on their website?
They should, yeah.
Okay, let's go and see there. So
regardless,
yeah, regardless. So according to
let's just work off of a 715.
Right, so we're doing 715,000. So great. People don't just listen to us. Yeah, but people don't just listen to us in Niagara, Jeff.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, what's it in Tokyo in Australia? Because they know we're hot there.
Yeah. No, but that doesn't apply. They didn't put the same. Anyways.
But that's where my fan mail comes from. So I wanna.
Moving on.
that's because you send them hoodies.
Yeah.
Just doesn't care about you. Well, I send it to them.
So $715,000. So let's just assume someone in April of 2021 was approved for $715,000. And they purchased, you know, sorry, they purchased a home for $700,000. Let's make it an even number. All right. In April of 2021. Now, with the size of that and where it was, it does not matter. And they came up with.
That would have been $715,000 and they purchased it for $815,000 probably in April.
Sure. So they got approved for a $700,000. They got approved for a max mortgage price of $700,000, which means they would have had to save if we're listening to OFSI, a minimum of a minimum of $175,000. So the house was priced at $875,000. They saved a 20% down payment, and that was a $175,000 down payment, resulting in a mortgage of $700,000. Under the old mortgage rules, 20% or higher is an uninsured mortgage. Correct, Trevor?
Okay, so let's... 20% or higher is an uninsured mortgage. The best way to look at it is, let's go and say here, let's look at it from the average household income. So Curry, average statistic right now for the average household income in Canada?
With children's, $101,000.
$101,000, okay. Mm-hmm. So we've got...
Based on 2018 StatsCan.
Okay, perfect. Let's just throw out, I don't know, $3,600 a year in taxes, $100 a month, amortized over 25 years. We can do 3,944, 479. Your maximum mortgage amount, okay, based on 101,000, you're looking at about 505. Okay.
Yep.
So fast forward past June 1, which we're already in it. Your purchase price goes from 505, excuse me, your mortgage amount goes from 505 down to, so this is in addition to, like, plus your down payment that would be added into the equation. Your purchasing power now drops to 483.
So 20 grand.
Yep.
And you're making household income of $100,000, and you just lost $20,000 of purchasing power.
Yeah. So to be exact, to give you the exact percentage difference, 479. So divide that by 505, 960, 63, 4.4%.
So see, the difficulty is how do you correct a system where the people having difficulty getting in are the people without the money? Right? Because, yeah, so, I mean, okay, you ask somebody else that wants to get, like, an income producing property or something like that, and they're not concerned with the mortgage, right? Like, I mean, it's that poor couple that, you know,
well, the first time buyer is just getting crushed.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I said, poor couple, but I meant.
And that's why I say, like, so mandatory condition periods, right? Some people will argue, well, if you have a mandatory condition period, that means that if the four of us are all looking to buy a home separately, we'll just outbid each other, right? Because we all have a mandatory condition period. Yep. So I'm going to pay X, you're going to pay a little bit more. Curry, you're going to pay a little bit more than us. And Collins, because you're the richest of us all, you're just going to pay the most. Anyways, so, but the reality is, during that mandatory condition period, we already know that the bank is going to approve you on the lesser of your purchase price or the appraised value. So Now, all of a sudden we go, we get an appraisal done. Everything's done during that mandatory condition period. Appraisal comes in light. That vendor is going to have two choices, because as the purchaser now that has a lower appraised value, they're going to do one of two things. They're either going to renegotiate on the purchase price, or if the vendor is not willing to renegotiate, okay, see you later. Right? Those are, at least that will be the case for those that don't have the money to be able to do it. Those that have the money and they don't really care to overpay, they're just going to do it anyways. But nonetheless, that's going to help. Another thing that could help the market as well, why not make the qualifying criteria for buying investment properties harder?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
well, they did that. So they did that in Australia. So basically, if you were a resident, a permanent resident or a citizen of Australia,
yep,
and you were a first time home buyer, they waived the stamp duty, which is the 20% tax that you would have to pay to the government for buying that house. Whereas I was on a visa. I also had to come up with my down payment, whatever the purchase price was, and then come back with a 20% stamp duty that was taxed. They would waive that for first-time home buyers. If you were getting an investment property, or you were not a permanent resident or a Canadian taxpayer or Australian taxpayer, you would have to pay 20%. Well, now you're coming up with your down payment of, let's say, 5%, you got to come up with, or let's say 30%, sorry, beg your pardon, because they operated on an investment property of 30 points. Yep. You would have to come up with 50 points. Now people are starting to think twice about making that investment property.
Yeah.
So you're not buying multiple ones either, because they can only buy one instead of two they would have bought, right? So it's taking some of those purchases out of the market.
Yep.
Well,
we have the non-resident, right? We have the 15% non-res. But we don't have 15% on the secondary property.
Right.
Well, and you know, they establish a minimum criteria, right? Or like come up with a solution of, okay, well, you know, as Canadians or people that live in North America, our lifestyle is very accustomed to having a home and a cottage, right? That secondary property. Or kids go away to school, mom and dad buy a property for that kid to live in while they're away at school. And so the secondary home part, but then now we get into additional investment properties. As a broker, most lenders have us restricted to 4+ a primary residence. So if they're going to do, but this is the funny part. So Scotiabank is a good example, and not ragging on Scotia, but using them as an example. So Scotiabank, I can do a mortgage with Scotiabank. Essentially, you're good for 5 principal residence, 4 rentals that we can get away with. After that, they cut you off. And it doesn't matter if they are just financed with Scotia. It's just kind of general blanket elsewhere. But you can walk into a Scotiabank branch or a Scotiabank HFA, home financing advisor. They refer to their mobile mortgage specialists as. And sky's the limit. Right? Lots of institutions are like that when you're dealing with them.
Right.
So why not go and implement, like, instead of it being, why is it 20%? Make it 30%. Do something. And I'm not claiming to have the answers, but I definitely think that if we did two things here, mandatory condition periods, I'm a firm belief, and again, my own opinion on this one, you know, not the brokerage. I'm not speaking on behalf of Neighborhood Dominion Lending Centers when I make that comment, but also going in and implementing some type of more stringent criteria to qualifying for mortgages when you're buying an investment property. Something's got to give.
Well, we don't
the problem in the market's the first time buyers. So if you were approved at 400 in the stress test, now you're 380, you're jamming down these first buyers into a more contested, heated kind of buying area, right? And the problem with them is, it's not the problem I can't find something for them to buy. I can't get a condition on the purchase for them. Like, I'm looking with the one guy we were talking about earlier, and the second there's an offer in it, we're screwed.
Yeah.
I bit my tongue there, but they can't get any conditions whatsoever. So that'll fix that one problem right there. Yes. But it's still a hotly contested price point, because they're also competing with people. If you're looking under $300,000, it's almost impossible in Niagara. Impossible. And if something comes up under $300,000, you're competing with someone who's got a line of credit that buys it and flips it and is done.
Yeah, buys it, flips it. They're buying it as an investment property, right? Because
based on where the rental... Or they're keeping it as a rental property and buying it cheap.
Yeah, based on where the cap rate is right now, absolutely. Like, that's that price point, $400,000 or less. You've got your first-time homebuyers, your downsizers, your investors, your flippers that are all going into the same market. They're all trying to buy that same home. So
why not increase the capital gains on something that's flipped within a year?
Yeah, but that's not going to – we have a supply problem. We don't have a tax problem, right? So, yeah, but to Bondo's point, no.
You're flipping seven houses a year. Have you seen those ones that say, we buy houses cheap, we buy ugly houses, blah, 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 blah? They're surviving on doing more than one a year. They're doing 15 to 20 of them, and they're all trained on this.
Right, but that's not going to solve the problem because by taxing capital gains, if you flip it within a year – is just taking more tax from the person that's just going to do it anyway. So if they want to still meet the same threshold, they're just if right now it's 50%, you increase it to 75% of capital taxable capital gains inclusion, which was what it was in 2000. And they're doing five a year. They're just going to do 10. That's all they're going to do. These people don't care. It's not like to Bondo's point. They don't even think twice. They'll be just like, oh, you've increased the down payment from 20 to 30? Okay. They're still going to do it anyways because the math makes sense.
You'll create a bigger divide, right? You're going to cut out that middle class because you're going to get the people at the top.
As a matter of fact, the flippers are the ones that you want. You want people to buy, flip it, and get it back on the market again and redo it. You don't want people to – what we don't want and what is happening is you've got, in some cases, people who are out of city or out of province or in some cases out of country buying up massive amounts of real estate and just sitting on it. It's happening in downtown St. Catharines right now. The
company buying $1 billion worth of rental properties?
Yeah, so I was just about before you interrupted, I said, like, the old Standard building has had plans in downtown St. Catharines pre-pandemic for years because of the dirty cement and soil underneath because of the printing press. You can't do anything but essentially condos because the first floor is gone. You can't do anything on the first floor. Yeah. But they've got plans for student residents or whatever going up from the second floor onwards. And the guy has just sat on it and sat on it and sat on it for years and years and years. And he just doesn't care because it's a write-off for him. So this is what these, so you actually want the flippers. You want the people to come in, buy the dogs, invest, gut, flip, and move. That's what you want. As a matter of fact,
I think with a flipper, though, you could put a little bit more protection on there because half the houses I look at for flips are dog shit work done. It's hidden stuff, and it makes it look like it's good. It's causing more problems, and they're enhancing the price point, and it's not worth the value because they don't pull any permits or anything like that. Half the stuff's hidden because it's new drywall, so you can't see what's going on. So as much as I like the flippers, I think if they're a flipper, they should be able to determine they're a flipper by how many times they're doing it. Because you have to claim when you sell or buy a house. And it's very easy for the government to kind of keep track of that. They've got land transfer tax and all that stuff for it, right? So they should know what's going on. But there's some garbage flips that go out there, and I go through all the time.
Yeah.
So as much as they like the flippers, and I think if you tax them more, as much as you think they're just going to do more, there's going to be a breaking point where they say, well, this is not worth it for us anymore. We're giving more profit to the government than we're making. But they're taking
right. $400,000. There definitely will be some. You're definitely going to cut out a chunk of people that are going to look at it from the perspective and say, you know what, the taxes on it are too high.
It's crazy. But all those houses under 400K, the first-time buyers can't get because they can't get any conditions. If it was all first-time buyers, they all had conditions, then they'd be able to get it. But they're competing with people who are flipping all the time. It's impossible. And the flips are terrible. Like, there's some good – but if you're a good flipper, you're not doing that. You'll get in the building.
Yeah.
Flippers are half-assed contractors typically doing it. And they're out there putting things of paper, and everybody's things trying to beat out the real estate agents for it by saying, hey, we'll do it cheaper, we'll buy cash, no conditions, blah, 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 blah. All they're doing is screwing over the seller
or,
of that
house. Or fellow realtors are doing it too. Hey there, Jeffrey.
Yeah, really, you should have your license taken if you get caught doing that.
Oh, well, don't you know anyone on the board of the discipline for the local realtors?
I'm on the high performance board, but we haven't had anything in a little while. But you have to get a complaint before you deal with it. If nobody complains, nothing happens.
Got it. Anyways, well, that was a great episode. Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks very much for listening. We really appreciate it. Please continue to send in your questions, and we will get them on as soon as possible. Bondo?
Help us help you stay informed.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.